those of you that weren't with us yesterday, this visit here in Naperville is going to be focused on the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, where Krishna is killing the demons. And this is the last slide, so this will help you. And I help those of us that were here last night focus. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, especially these two acharyas, have analyzed the killing of the pastimes, the killing of the demons, that portion of Krishna's pastimes, as having special significance for sadhakas. When Krishna appears, he's reciprocating with his devotees. He can kill the demons without coming himself. He can do all kinds of things to have demons killed. But his coming and killing demons and the other naimittika or occasional pastimes that do not occur in Goloka, the birth pastime, marriage of the gopis pastimes, Krishna's leaving Vrindavan pastime, and the killing of demons, do not take place in Goloka, but they take place here. And there's a purpose, a transcendental purpose, indicated in this third paragraph. I'll read. Practicing devotees, sadhakas, this is quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or a translation of his writing. Practicing devotees understand these occasional pastimes to be like negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. We discussed that language last night. And such sincere devotees hope that by the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performing of different occasional pastimes, their own various anarthas or unwanted material contaminations will be destroyed. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to destroy our material contaminations by meditating on Krishna's pastimes. And even specifically the purpose, the specific purpose of the pastimes, because the killing of demons and the specific demons and which specific anarthas or unwanted qualities within our heart, or the risks on the path of bhakti that are dangers. So Krishna protects his devotee, his sadhakas, through these leelas. By remembering these pastimes, devotees aspire to destroy their demoniac mentalities or tendencies. So we're going to begin with demon number one. After we heard the Kamsa's dispatching demons to kill the eighth child of Devaki that was somewhere in his kingdom. So he dispatched Putana to kill all children of below a certain age. And she was really expert at it. She had lots of practice. And she had a certain technique which we're going to describe. And this is a nice illustration. Here's Putana down here. We see the horns and her blackish body. But so there's other pastimes. Here she's coming to see baby Krishna and try to kill him. I don't know exactly what all of this is. Anyway, at the end of this chapter, there's a benediction. So we'll start with a benediction. That'll help us pay attention. Any person who hears with faith and devotion about how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Putana, and who thus invests his hearing in such childhood pastimes of Krishna, certainly attains attachment for Govinda. the supreme original person. So that's certainly a goal, to become attached to Govinda, the supreme original person. So let us invest our hearing, ardent hearing, Prabhupada calls it, so that attachment, that means something is standing in the way between us and attachment, and that's our own contamination. There, not only Srimad Bhagavatam, but there are many scriptures that describe this wonderful pastime. And there are different varieties of details in the narrations, and we'll hear some of them. And the reason for those varieties of details is because there's different appearances of Krishna. Just like, for example, in the Bhagavatam, there's the Rakta Varaha and Sweta Varaha. Lord Varaha has these two different appearances. In his case, in one day of Brahma, in different Manus. But Krishna's appearance in Vrindavan is only once in every day of Brahma, but Brahma has lots of days in his life. And during those days, Krishna appears, and there's different details in his pastimes, because there's different appearances of Krishna in different days of Brahma's life. And the variety is there, Prabhupada says, for the sake of enjoyment. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. So the thread of the pastime is essentially the same, and there's some details that are different. So as you hear different things as we're going along, don't worry, it's quite okay. That's because Krishna is an enjoyer. He enjoys in different ways, it's only his internal potency by which he's displaying his pastimes. So the chapter begins in the Bhagavatam with Nanda Maharaj going to Mathura to pay his taxes to King Kamsa. So, and when he hears Nanda Maharaj paying his taxes to the tax collector, and hears Kamsa meeting with his demon friends, making plans to kill Krishna, here's the gatekeepers guarding the gate of Kamsa's palace. This is the river Jamuna, and on the other side is where Nanda Maharaj was living. Here's our friend Putana and the gopis discussing with one another, and over here, Mother Jasoda, having rescued Krishna. See, this is the same dress. This is Mother Jasoda now going to the cow pasture and taking cow urine and bathing Krishna in cow urine, because cow urine is auspicious and makes for purification. We'll hear some more. When Putana, Rakshasi Putana, Rakshasi because she would eat children and drink their blood. She was not a nice lady. She came as a, Prabhupada describes this, a kichari, or a witch that can fly in space. I remember sitting in front of Prabhupada and hearing him describe this. Even today, in the northern parts of India, there are such witches. And they take a branch of a tree and they fly in the sky on the branch of a tree, not only in Harry Potter stories, but or on Halloween, where witches are flying in the sky on a broomstick. But there are such capacities, and she had such capacity. She had some other capacities too. Putana Rakshasi came to Braja converting herself by mystic power into a beautiful young woman. In one of the scriptures it described that she was given a Shakuni mantra. Shakuni means disguise. You know who is Shakuni in Mahabharata? You can read about him later. Shakuni was he was one of Duryodhana's best buddies. He was bad. He was the dice playing person, remember? Yeah, Shakuni. So, by mantra she could change into this form and that form, just by this mystic mantra that she had. And when she entered Braja, first flying in the sky as a witch, changing herself into a beautiful, there's detailed description of her, beautiful form. She was so beautiful. The residents of Braja thought, maybe this is the goddess of fortune. She was so amazingly beautiful. And so they approached her and asked her, who are you? We've never seen you before. And she identified that she was the wife of a brahmana from Mathura. And she came to pay her respect to the newborn child that she heard was the son of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, which was done in cultured circles. And so, being so beautiful and wife of a brahmana, and they just let her enter right into where Krishna was. No one said anything. Now she's the first. Later, when Bakasura is sent by Krishna, he was really happy to take revenge for Krishna's killing his younger sister. Because of her exquisite beauty, no one checked her movement, and therefore she freely entered the house of Nanda Maharaj. There she is entering the house. There she is going before the place where Krishna was, and she picked Krishna up and made her plan to kill him. She could at once, when she entered, she could at once perceive this child is not ordinary, but is meant to kill all demons, the Bhagavatam specifically says. She also appreciated that he could destroy the whole universe immediately. But she was a demoness. She went ahead and did her whole program. Another place that says that Putana could at once perceive that the baby was hiding his unparalleled potencies. This is the nature of demoniac personalities. Even they understand, somehow they understand something, they go right ahead and perform their activity. Shukadeva Goswami describes that Putana Rakshasi's heart was fierce and cruel, but she looked like a very affectionate mother. Thus Putana resembled a sharp sword with a soft sheath. And baby Krishna appeared like a powerful fire covered by ashes. This nice metaphorical language. Well, Krishna, how old is Krishna at this time? Just a few days. One of the things that Prabhupada liked to describe as proof that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that even in a childlike form, infant, he was all-powerful. We want to hear some of his all-powerfulness. Lord Sri Krishna, the all-pervading Supersoul, lying on the bed, understood that Putana, a witch who is expert in killing small children, imagine having that as an expertise. You got to practice at something to become expert. She had a lot of practice. She killed so many children. Had come to kill him, therefore, as if afraid of her, Krishna closed his eyes. Thus Putana took upon her lap him who was to be her own annihilation, just as an unintelligent person places a sleeping snake on his lap, thinking the snake to be a rope. This is a verse, and the verse has its commentary, and Jiva Goswami in particular, in his commentary, expresses that there are four reasons, he lists them, four reasons why Krishna closed his eyes. Some say that Krishna closed his eyes because he did not want to see the face of Putana, who had killed so many children, and it would now come to kill him. So he closed his eyes. I don't want to see her. Others say that something extraordinary was being dictated to her, and in order to give her assurance, Krishna closed his eyes so that she would not be frightened. Because Krishna is within the heart of Putana, just like Krishna is within the heart of a thief. And the thief wants to steal, so Krishna, within the heart, gives intelligence to the thief how to steal. I mean, giving intelligence how to Putana, how to try to kill him, because that's her desire. But he didn't want her to be frightened. He knew that she knew. He has unlimited potencies, and he's hiding them. So he didn't want her to stop her business, so he closed his eyes. And yet others interpret in this way. Krishna appeared to kill the demons and give protection to the devotees, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Ritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. The first demon to be killed was a woman. According to Vedic rules, the killing of a woman, a brahmana, cows, or a child is forbidden. Krishna was obliged to kill the demon, Putana. And because the killing of a woman is forbidden according to Vedic Shastra, he could not help but close his eyes. Make reference to this a little bit later, who Putana was in her previous life. Well, I'll mention it now. So, who Putana was in her previous life was, different scriptures say that the daughter of Bali Maharaj, some say the sister of Bali Maharaj, who, when she saw Vamana, she thought, oh, what a beautiful small boy. If I had such a son, I would be very happy to affectionately breastfeed him. But then when she saw that Vamana, after taking everything from her brother, had him arrested and had him tied up in rope, she thought, I'll kill him. Vamana, the scriptures say, understanding the heart of the sister or the daughter of Bali, when she said, I would like to have him as my son, he proclaimed, whatever is the desire within your heart, it shall be fulfilled. So was the other one, that she would try to kill Krishna. But who was Bali Maharaj? In relation to Bali Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj was his grandfather. And Krishna, or Lord Nrisimhadev, had given a promise to Prahlad that although you're born in Daitya family, none of your descendants will be killed by me. But the daughter of Bali Maharaj, or the sister of Bali Maharaj, was such a descendant. And here she's being killed. So the scriptures say because she was a woman, this was an exception. But still he didn't want to. So he closed his eyes. Another interpretation is that Krishna closed his eyes because he simply took Putana to be his nurse. And then that's explained in this next section. According to scriptures, there are seven kinds of mothers. Prabhupada often would quote this. Atma Mata Guru Patni, one's mother by birth, and the wife of the spiritual master, and Brahmani, the wife of a Brahmana, the wife of the king, the cow, the nurse, and Mother Earth. Seven mothers. So because Putana came to take Krishna on her lap and offer her breast milk to be sucked by him, she was accepted by Krishna as one of his mothers. That is considered to be another reason he closed his eyes. He had to kill a nurse or a mother. But his killing of his mother or nurse was no different from his love for his real mother or foster mother Yashoda. We further understand from Vedic information that Putana was also treated as a mother, ultimately, and given the same facility as Yashoda. She was given liberation, or she achieved the position of one of the assistants of Mother Yashoda in Goloka Vrindavan. So this is all just some detail about Krishna closed his eyes when Putana approached him. On that very spot, in the presence of Yashoda and Rohini, the fiercely dangerous Rakshasi pushed her breastly nipple into his mouth. And again, the texts that describe, many texts describing this Leela, indicate that Yashoda and Rohini were present. They saw the whole thing happening. But they didn't do anything. And they didn't do anything for the reasons mentioned. She was so exquisitely beautiful, like the goddess of fortune. And she said she was a wife of a brahmana from Mathura just to come and pay her respects. So she came to pay her respect and she picked up the child. And then she went to feed the child. But there was deadly poison smeared on her breast, specifically with the aim of killing the child. That was one of her routines for killing children. So Krishna knew all of that. So Krishna accepted the offering of the motherly service, but at the same time he was very angry, so he took hold of her breast, squeezed it very hard with both hands, and sucked out both the poison and her life. Now, just think about it for a moment. Especially those of you who are parents. How tiny are the hands of a newborn child? They're like, you know, little twigs. And how strong are the little, like, little child can hold onto your finger at most. But how hard can they squeeze? Sometimes they're pretty hard. But Krishna squeezed so hard that Putana screamed, unbearably pressed in every vital point. The demon Putana began to cry, "Please leave me, please leave me, suck my breast no longer." He squeezed and squeezed and squeezed, sucked out her life air. Perspiring, her eyes wide open, her arms and legs flailing, she cried very loudly again and again. The commentary of our acharyas say that the power that she had, this Shakuni mantra power, as her life air was being drawn out, her ability to change her shape was being drawn out also. And so her body started to transform into the demoness form. In this way, the demon Putana, fleeing from the palace into the courtyard, very much aggrieved because her breast was being attacked by Krishna, lost her life. Oh, King Parikshit, opening her mouth wide and spreading her arms, legs, and hair, she fell down in the pasturing ground in an original form as a Rakshasi, as Vritrasura had fallen when killed by the thunderbolt of Indra. This is a small detail, but Bhagavad Purana is distinguished from other Puranas in that the Bhagavatam describes the killing of Vritrasura, or the whole Vritrasura Leela, meaning it's not described in the other Puranas. So when the Puranas describe the glories of the emperor amongst all the Puranas, it's one of the ways they describe it. It not only is it 18,000 verses, but it's the Purana that describes Indra's killing Vritrasura. So here in the Bhagavatam, that reference is also being made. She fell. As Putana screamed loudly and forcefully, the earth with its mountains and outer space with its planets trembled. Her screaming was pretty loud. The lower planets in all directions vibrated, and people fell down, fearing that thunderbolts were falling upon them. She was a huge demon, 12 miles long. She knocked over all the trees and anything in the way, and Shukadeva Goswami says she was certainly extraordinary. And a number of nice paintings that residents of Vrindavan running, hearing this crashing sound. Opening her mouth wide and spreading her arms and hair, she fell in the pasturing ground in her original form. The Rakshasi's mouth was full of teeth, each resembling the front of a plow. Her nostrils were deep like mountain caves, and her breasts resembling big slabs of stone fallen from a hill. Her scattered hair was the color of copper. The sockets of her eyes appeared like deep, blind wells. Her fearful thighs resembled the banks of a river. Her arms, legs, and feet seemed like big bridges. And her abdomen appeared like a dried up lake. The hearts, ears, and heads of the coward men and women were already shocked by the Rakshasi's screaming. And when they saw the fierce wonder of her body, they were even more frightened. Looked like she crashed on a house. This is Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev having a conversation, because when Nanda Maharaj went to Mathura to pay his taxes to Kamsa, he went and visited his friend Vasudev. And Vasudev, because this is shortly after the child was born, Vasudev knew that the eighth child of Devaki was now being taken care of by Nanda Maharaj, because he brought and put the child right by the side of Yashoda. And he knew also that Kamsa was planning to kill Krishna. But he didn't want to disturb the mind and the mood of Nanda Maharaj. So he said, I think there is going to be great danger. I think you should get back as quickly as you can and protect your son. Without fear, the child Krishna was playing on the upper portion of Putana Rakshasi's breasts, and when the gopis saw the child's wonderful activities, they immediately came forward with great jubilation and picked him up. Here they are picking him up. Here's Krishna on the breast of Putana, and they're reaching to rescue him. In Krishna Sandarbha, which is describing the position of Krishna, Jiva Goswami makes reference to Harivamsa, where Harivamsa says, when the cowherd men and gopis saw that the gigantic demoness had, instead of her attempt to kill Krishna, instead she had been killed by the tiny child Krishna, they exclaimed, oh, our child is rescued. It is as if he has attained another birth, Ja, unseen by us, Adhoksa. Because of this exclamation by the cowherd men, Lord Krishna is known as Adhoksaja, or he who, unseen by the cowherd men, was born again. One of Krishna's names is Adhoksaja. That is, by our blunt material senses, he cannot be perceived. Akshaja. To see. Adhoksaja cannot be seen. Adhoksaja. So, it's like Krishna was dead and Krishna came back to life. Unseen by us. He was to be killed by this. So they started calling him a hoaxer. You get it? This is the sweetness of Vraja. When they see that which demonstrates he's God, they call him by the name of God, a hoaxer. But they see it in a different way. Oh, how wonderful! As if brought back from the dead and now having another birth. Akshaja. Adhoksaja. So they started calling him Adhoksaja. This is Vrindavan. So Rohini and Yashoda rescuing Krishna, of course, there's Balaram. Lots of paintings. Of course, this is in color, but it's a black and white of the color painting. So, what did Mother Yashoda do? Mother Yashoda and Rohini, along with elder gopis, waved the switch of a cow. That's like, you know, this little funny piece at the end, before him to give protection. And then they took him to a place where there were cows, and he was thoroughly washed with cow urine and then smeared with the dust raised by the movements of the cows, because cows are so sacred and sanctifying. Then different names of the Lord were applied with cow dung on 12 different parts of his body, beginning with the forehead, as is done applying tilak. So in case you have a child and the child has a problem, now you know what to do. Prabhupada makes this comment that although they were village people, they knew the art of giving protection to their children in a transcendental way. They didn't take them to a doctor and have an MRI and see if he had any broken bones or something. In this way, the child was given protection to save him from future inauspicious accidents. It was taking away anything inauspicious by applying auspiciousness, starting with the cow. There's the switch of the cow. And Mother Jasoda is holding Krishna with her feet, and they're bathing Krishna, and there's the bowl catching the bathing water. Similarly here. So there's a detailed description. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Shukadeva Goswami informed Maharaj Parikshit that the gopis, following the proper system, washing hands and feet and sipping water three times for purification, protected Krishna, their child, with this mantra. And it gives the mantra. So, invoking sacred mantras for the protection of their child Krishna, they knew the art. They're not educated, erudite Brahmanis. They're village ladies. But they know these mantras. And the idea is that Krishna shall be protected. Protect from this side, protect from this place and that place, this part of the body. May Rishikesh protect your senses, and Narayana, your life air. May the master of Shvetadvipa protect the core of your heart, and may Yogeshwara protect your mind. May Prishnigarbha protect your intelligence, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, your soul. While you are playing, may Govinda protect you, and while you are sleeping, may Madhava protect you. May Lord Vaikuntha protect you while you are walking. May Lord Narayana, the husband of the goddess of fortune, protect you while you are sitting. Similarly, may Lord Yajnabhuk, the fearful enemy of all evil planets, always protect you while you enjoy life. So after chanting all these mantras, Mother Jasoda, one of the signs of now a child is okay, is if they're comfortable enough to take milk from their mother. So that's what she did. She began feeding, breastfeeding Krishna, and got him to lie down on his bed. So that's like, now everything is okay. Meanwhile, having heard from Vasudeva about the danger that might befall upon Krishna, he came back very quickly from Mathura. And as he's coming along the road, he saw this humongous 12-mile-long body of a giant demoness. This is Nanda Maharaj coming back and seeing, look at this. And they exclaimed, my dear friends, you must know that Anakundundubi Vasudeva has become a great saint or a master of mystic power. Otherwise, how could he have foreseen this calamity? He knew Kamsa. And he knew that there was, anyway, so there was Krishna was that child. This is Putana approaching Krishna, and Krishna's causing her death. There she is, a goner. Look at her teeth. The inhabitants of Braja cut the gigantic body of Putana into pieces with the help of axes. Then they threw the pieces far away, covered them with wood, and burned them to ashes. There's the fire. There they're chopping away. There is Nanda Maharaj overseeing the whole thing. And the explanation was given that mystical beings would sometimes apparently come back to life as long as the body was there. So they didn't want that. So they cut the body in pieces and burned the pieces, so she wouldn't come back to life. Because of Krishna having sucked the breast of Rakshasi Putana, when Krishna killed her, she was immediately freed of all material contamination. Her sinful reactions automatically vanished. And therefore, when her gigantic body was being burnt, the smoke emanating from her body was fragrant, like a guru incense. Krishna had such fragrance. So Krishna's contact with Putana meant she took on the body of demoness Putana, took on similar quality. So here they're chopping up the body, here they're burning the pieces, there they're bathing Krishna and taking the swatch or the end of the tail of the cow to purify. Because Krishna embraced Putana's body with great pleasure and sucked her breast, although she was a great witch, she attained the position of a mother in the transcendental world and thus achieved the highest perfection. What then can be said of the cows whose nipples Krishna sucked with great pleasure and offered their milk very jubilantly with affection, exactly like that of a mother? Like this whole deal of Krishna assuming the form of calves is because the cows, in the time of milking, Krishna would directly from the udder of the cow would drink the milk. They were like, their motherly affection was so much fulfilled. But they actually desired to have Krishna as their child, so Krishna became their calf. So as Putana, although she came to kill Krishna, was given this position in Goloka as the assistant to Mother Yashoda, what to speak of the cows? And one of the scriptures described that when Lord Krishna killed her, a great chariot came to take her to Goloka Vrindavan. It had 100 wheels and was totally jewel encrusted. It had 10,000 chamaras on it and 10,000 mirrors. The description of how the Rath Yatra cart is decorated has similar, like the chariot that takes Krishna to Vrindavan or to Gundicha. There is Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd man, Mother Yashoda, and the gopis. So we're almost done with the Leela. This is a cover picture of Krishna Kathamrita, and the explanation down here of why there's an owl is because some of the versions say that when Putana, the shape-changing mantra that she had, Shakuni mantra, was she came as an owl. And specifically, the verses say, Uluki, this is from Harivamsa, she came as an owl. She, instead of flying on a broom, she flew as an owl to get to find Krishna. And then she took on the form of a beautiful, apparently, nurse. And then the middle portion is Krishna being taken off the body of Putana. And then up top, there's a mountain range. And the artist that created this was indicating something we're going to describe just now from Rupa Goswami's writing in Lalita Madhava, where Putana took Radharani from the Vindhya hills and brought her to Braja. It's a little complex. You have to listen carefully. This is an illustration. Putana carrying Radharani in one hand and Chandravali in the other hand. She kidnapped them from the Vindhya hills. So the explanation, just a quick gloss, is when Putana was sent by Kamsa, specifically, he was to kill the boys and kidnap the girls, or whatever little girls she found. So when she was flying around, she went to the Vindhya hills and she saw two girls that were the daughters of the Vindhya hills, and she picked them up and started flying through the air, carrying them. But Vindhya had brahmanas, and the brahmanas uttered a curse, a demon-killing curse. So Putana dropped one of the girls, Chandravali, in the kingdom of Bhishmaka. So Chandravali later became the daughter of King Bhishmaka, or Rukmini. It's very complicated. So here's the description. This is taken directly from Lalita Madhava, and it's a drama, so there's a narrator, and the narrator says, Mount Vindhya grew taller and taller until he challenged even his relative, Mount Meru. He was competitive. Agastya Muni visited Mount Vindhya. The mountain, Vindhya, bowed down to offer respects. Agastya asked Mount Vindhya to remain in that position until he returned. He never returned. So Vindhya could not raise his head again. In this way, Mount Vindhya's pride was humbled. That's the narrator. Now, Purnamasi. Purnamasi is Yogamaya, personified in Krishna's pastimes. So she is speaking to Gargi, who is the daughter of Santipani Muni. So Purnamasi says, it is Brahma's word, O Mount Vindhya, to fulfill your desire, you will have two daughters that will give you a son-in-law who will defeat Lord Shiva and whose virtues will fill the world with wonder. So Vindhya, after he couldn't get taller than Mount Meru, he decided, well, I'd like to have a son-in-law, a daughter whose husband, or a son-in-law, who could defeat Lord Shiva, the son of the Himalayas. Competitive. Ambitious, competitive. So Gargi asked, why did Mount Vindhya desire a daughter and not a son? Purnamasi said he had become the rival of King Himalaya, who is the father of Gauri, and very proud of the opulence of his son-in-law, Lord Shiva. So he was, I want a better son-in-law. He's proud, I'm going to be more proud. I'm going to surpass Gargi. He could not tolerate the glory of his own family. In ancient times, he tried to defeat Mount Meru. He could not rise again after he bowed down to offer respects to Agastya Muni. Purnamasi, yes. The intelligent are like that. I mean, those that are proud of their intelligence are like that. Gargi, how did Radha go from Mount Vindhya to Gokula? Purnamasi, she was taken by Putana, the kidnapper of children. So what's not described here is, it actually comes up. She was taken by Putana, the kidnapper of children, Gargi. Witches that steal children generally eat their victims. This girl is very fortunate to be saved. And Purnamasi said, "Oh, daughter, Kamsa ordered to kill all extraordinary small boys and to kidnap any small girls." Gargi, "Why did the king ask her to do these two things?" And Purnamasi said, "He was pushed by the words of Devaki's demoness daughter, demigoddess daughter." Gargi, "What were those words?" Purnamasi, "She, Durga, said to Kamsa, 'This same person who in your previous birth severed your head with a chakra raised in battle, the same person who the sages know as he whose two lotus feet are worshipped by the demigods, the same person who pleases his loving devotees by showering them with oceans of nectar bliss, the same person who is the root from which the universe has sprouted and has now appeared in this world at the time of the moon's rising, today or the day after, eight sublimely sweet sakis will appear on this earth, two sisters who are like great palaces of beautiful transcendental qualities will also appear. When he defeats Lord Shiva, Lord Krishna, the King of Kings, will accept the hand of both the girls in marriage.'" This is Lalita Madhava, where Durga is saying all these things to Kamsa. Gargi, "What happened to the second sister?" So this is Radha. Now, what about Chandravali? Purnamasi, "When Vindhya's chief priest chanted a demon-killing mantra, Putana's heart became struck with fear as she was hastily flying over Vidarbha province. The first of her victims dropped from her and fell into a river's current." And there's more, but so then King Bhishmaka came and found the child and accepted the child as his child. And Radha was still in Putana's hand, and she dropped Radha somewhere, and Purnamasi took Radha and gave Radha to Kirtida and Rishabhanu. That's one of the appearances of Radharani. So she's sometimes known. One of the names of Radha is the daughter of the Vindhya Hills. So that's just one of the involvements of Radharani. Of Putana with Radharani, kidnapper of Radharani. In addition to trying to kill Krishna, she kidnapped Radha. So here's at Nanda Maharaja's palace at the bottom of the hill, there's a little temple that shows Putana, and here's a painting of the pastime at Nanda Maharaja's palace. So now the theme after the Leela, this is now coming from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and in a moment we'll hear something also from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Putana represents the pseudo-guru. The pseudo-guru may appear in one or both of two forms. Here's one: a deceitful so-called guru who preaches sense gratification or liberation or both. In some cases, this may be a person who is engaged in some Krishna conscious activity but has not realized the course of pure devotional service and tries to give instructions to his disciples beyond his own understanding or without regard for their situations. Now, without regard for their situations means We'll hear a little bit more, but instruction should be given to individuals according to their faith or their capacity to understand or their position in their spiritual trajectory. So different instructions may be given to different persons in different circumstances. And a qualified person, teacher, guru, instructor, needs to know. And when it doesn't have that qualification but assumes the position is a putana or a pseudo-guru. And then the second, indicated by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is the inwardly manifest spiritual guide, like mental speculation, in the form of mundane empiric reasoning faculty, or the material mind, is also like putana. So Krishna's appearing and killing putana offers the following protection for sadhakas, that's us. In order to show mercy to his devotees, Krishna sucks the life out of putana's breast. By so doing, Krishna demonstrated his power of protection of the budding attraction for Krishna, which has arisen within the young devotees' hearts, while simultaneously demonstrating his own innocent ecstasy. He's conducting a pastime, that is to say, putana came as a mother, so he accepted her service as a mother. At the same time, the contamination of putana, he withdrew. The pseudo-guru person, and protecting devotees from pseudo-gurus. But he uses this language, the antaranga guru and the bahiranga guru. We'll hear some more. The external false guru is the pretentious hypocrite who presents himself as guru even though he is not qualified. The internal false guru is the mind of the living entity, which causes him to take shelter of material logic and reason to understand the absolute truth. This illustration is taken from this Sri Krishna Kathamritam, and he has a whole article. This is Madhavananda, disciple of Guru Govinda Maharaj, who puts this together. And he has a whole article on hypocrisy, the hypocritical person who isn't qualified but assumes the role of one who is qualified and thus misleads people. He has a little section here. I'm just going to read a little bit. Excuse the length. There's so much on this topic, it's taking time, but I hope it's okay. In a scholarly way, he's taken extracts from different scriptures and different religions where they say the same thing. Hypocrisy is one of the greatest dangers in spiritual life. People that don't know should say they don't know. Instead, they say they know, and they mislead. Here's a statement from Judaism. King Alexander Jannaeus said to his wife, "Fear not the true Pharisees, nor the non-Pharisees, but those hypocrites who ape the Pharisees." In Buddhism, "What is the use of your matted hair, O witless man?" You're pretending to be a renunciate. "What is the use of your antelope skin garment? Within you are full of passions. Without you embellish yourself with the paraphernalia of an ascetic." And here is from the Bible. When Jesus discovered that materialistic persons had taken over the temple and were using it as a place to sell things to maintain themselves, He went into the temple and began to cast them out. Those that sold therein, and them that bought, saying unto them, It is written that my house is the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves. So, nice instruction. Our Hare Krishna movement is a place for persons who wish to be genuine servitors of Krishna. And it's our responsibility to maintain the institution and the place of worship and our homes and our lives and our hearts in that way. And when there's hypocritical behavior where one poses oneself in one way but factually is something else, externally look like this but internally, we all have our shortcomings and so forth, and that's okay. Let us take the humble position and try to make ourselves pure, but to project ourselves to others, before others, in a different way. This is what the protection of Krishna that comes, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking about. Here are some quotes from these two books, Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita and Krishna Samhita. So he makes these distinctions, external, internal guru. The external guru is he from whom the science of worship is learned. So like, how do we conduct ourselves? The internal is the super soul. There's the external guru is one who tells us how to perform devotional service. One who knows the proper path of attachment and who instructs his disciples according to their qualifications is a Sadguru or eternal guru. When argument poses as nourishment for the living entity's constitutional duties, this may be compared with Putana's falsely posing as a nurse. What is this saying? Some people take it as a religion, like modernity or modernism, is everything that must be verified by something that's rational. And without rationality, you can't accept anything. Please explain it to me by my rational mind, and if I can't understand it, I reject it. Because what's my guru is my rational power. He instructs me. So when argument, this rational capacity to argue and reason things, poses as nourishment for the living entity's constitutional duties, the duties of the soul, this may be compared with Putana's falsely posing as a nurse. We shouldn't take our mind, our reasoning power, and power of arguing things and getting to the bottom of things by that capacity. We all know people that have that position or disposition. That's Putana-like, the internal guru. Now the external, one who does not know the path of attachment, yet instructs others in this path, and who knows that path and instructs his disciples without considering their qualification, is a bogus guru and must be given up. Actually, this last section should be up here. They're not in proper order. So there are persons that don't know, yet they instruct, and persons that do know, but they don't consider the qualification of the individual and instruct accordingly. Those aren't qualified persons. Here's Bhakti Siddhanta. Now the picture is from a book where the articles from the Harmonist are printed. So Bhaktisiddhanta, seeking, and he's speaking about Putana. And it's very long. I just took one little paragraph from it. The Harmonist. The Putanas of this world have power only over the atheists. They perform such a thankless but salutary task for the so-called benefit of their unwilling victims. But as soon as the theistic disposition proper, makes its appearance in the pure consciousness of the awakened soul, the Putanas are decisively silenced. At the very earliest stage of their encounter with the newborn Krishna. Meaning, here's a new devotee, and they're not so clear about what the proper source is to hear from. That's common experience. And they hear from this source, they hear from that source, and they get confused. But when the theistic disposition awakens and one takes genuine shelter of the genuine source of knowledge, at once they're protected by Krishna. At once they're protected by Krishna. So here's a little summary. The pseudo-guru may appear in one or both of two forms. A deceitful so-called guru is one who preaches sense gratification. Oh, we read this. In some cases, yeah, we read this. Okay. Another application is science. Prabhupada liked to speak about this. The pseudo-guru, the scientists. They make scientific discoveries and they interpret those discoveries to convince intelligent so-called rational people that betting on the existence of God is not a reasonable gamble. Don't put your confidence in God. And there are a lot of people speaking that message and a lot of people listening to that message. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur especially, and he wrote a partial commentary on Mahabharata. And again, it was printed in the Harmonist. And when speaking about Ekalavya, who is pictured here worshipping the murti of Dronacharya, he describes like this, that both the spiritual master as well as the disciple must be a living representative of the disciplic succession. So this is placing some onus on the disciple as well as the teacher. So Ekalavya, pictured here, he was the son of the king of the forest dwellers, Nishadas. And his father's name is Hiranya Datus. So as the son of Hiranya Datus, he approached Drona and requested Drona to teach him archery. But Drona recognized he's not qualified. And it wasn't just because of his birth, he was a forest dweller. But he was very ambitious and proud. His ambition was he wanted to become better archer than Arjuna. And seeing that disqualification, contamination of heart, he refused. He wouldn't accept him as a student. And so, rather than accepting the instruction of Drona, he went ahead and did it anyways. In the forest, he built a deity of Drona. And through that ardent worship, he would practice hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours every day. And he became so expert, his abilities surpassed Arjuna. Because Drona said to Arjuna, you're the best, and there will be no one better than you. It just cannot exist. So one day Drona had sent them to the forest to practice their skills, and when they were in the forest they saw a dog that with seven arrows were piercing the mouth of the dog so he couldn't even bark. And Arjuna didn't know how to do that. So they went back to Drona and said, "What's up? You said that you would, there would be no one that would surpass, but here's this person, because they wanted to find out who it was, and it was Ekalavya. You said he learned it from Drona. So what's the situation? So Drona said, I don't know. I haven't accepted Ekalavya as a student. So they, let's go and find Ekalavya. So they went to find Ekalavya, and Ekalavya paid his obeisances and said, my dear Guru, you've come to see me, some service. He said, yes, I understand that you've learned your archery from me. Yes, yes. Well, I have the right to request dakshin, so the request is your thumb. And immediately cut off his thumb, which meant that he couldn't use his archery skills anymore. So Bhaktisiddhanta writes elaborately that many people say, oh, just see how surrendered he was. He even asked for his thumb and he took his thumb. He gave his thumb to Drona. What a great devotee, disciple. But Bhaktisiddhanta says that's a wrong understanding. The right understanding is he was attached in an ambitious way. And to fulfill his ambition, he became very virtuous in terms of external dharma or moralities, and so it asked for his thumb, he gave his thumb. That was his attachment. His attachment wasn't to the person. His attachment was to morality and virtue. As at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, so at least apparently was Arjuna, rather than Krishna's interest. So for that reason, something that's very powerful in the hand of a person who doesn't have good character is very dangerous. So that's why Drona wanted his thumb, or to neutralize his ability to use that skill. And then later, and I spent a lot of time, researching all of what I'm presenting to you, and one of the pieces that I couldn't find the answer to is Mahabharata and other places say that eventually Krishna killed Ekalavya. So far I've been unable to find the details of that. But of course Duryodhana was also envious of especially Bhima, but the Pandavas. And he was killed. Not by Krishna, but he was killed. And so the detail of how that was, that Ekalavya was killed by Krishna, don't have it. But what the detail is. But Krishna killed him. Krishna did. He was so attached. Sometimes Krishna relieves his devotees, of pride, like Indra. But in this case, it's not devotion, it's just pride. He was so attached. Krishna killed him. So the message here is not only the teacher or the spiritual master shouldn't be a hypocrite, but the student or the disciple shouldn't be a hypocrite. There may be a qualified guru in this, but an unqualified disciple, or a sincere disciple looking for a qualified guru who's a cheater. Krishna will protect if one is sincere. That's the whole point. So the take home, because I was asked about this last night, what's the take home? What's the application point? Make sure that when we apply ourselves in practicing devotion to Krishna, we do it in a very careful way, very sincerely. Follow, like it says at the top, where we're a living representative of the message that we're hearing. That's so that there's qualification in this process. If it can be a Putana-like guru and a Putana-like disciple. Hitopadesh, to tell the same story for children. Once upon a time, there was a bird and a rabbit, and they wanted to find a guru. So there was a tiger that understood, oh, I can cheat this bird and this rabbit if I just take the position of a guru. So he sat straight, had his Rudraksha beads, and sitting on a deer skin to keep away the snakes, and with his kamandalu and like his little armrest for chanting japa, very peacefully chanting. And so they came and offered their respects. And he raised his hand and gave his benedicting. Here's my blessings. I'll give you some simple service. You can go collect alms for me. And as they were going about their service, he pounced on them and ate them. Cheating or hypocrisy or presenting oneself as if one has some qualification that one doesn't present. Disguising oneself as a saintly person without the real qualifications. And as Prabhupada would say, this is going on. So Krishna appears to protect one from that. His appearance of in this world, specifically even the killing of Putana, is for that purpose. Now Prabhupada made reference to this from time to time. You know, it happened right in Chicago. What's his name? Vivekananda came to attend a world conference of religions and surprised everybody at the world conference of religions, saying, you're all looking for God, but you should just know that you're all God. So why are you looking for God? And it was a week-long conference, and he had to leave the conference because he had a toothache. The Prabhupada said, God had a toothache. What kind of God is this? Such is the position of bogus gurus. I am God, you're God, all is one. The cheating is, besides not qualification, the real propensity for serving Krishna is killed. That was Putana's wishing to kill Krishna. The propensity for serving Krishna is killed by such people. So Krishna protects sincere devotees. So here's this is not for this audience, it's for another audience. But there's a proper way to receive transcendental knowledge through the cyclic succession like Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, according to Padma Purana, still intact today, the cyclic successions, and one should receive knowledge in that method from the cyclic succession. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that's our position. And when we keep the association of such qualified saintly persons, of whom there are so many, particularly in our sampradaya, this picture here of Lord Chaitanya and the Panchatattva and the six Goswamis, and those who associated with the six Goswamis and heard from them, and so forth. And the Sangha of Vaishnavas is many, many. And we should keep that association very carefully, and that way we can be pulled from the ocean of material existence and return to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Now, who was Putana? There are Brahma Vaivarta Purana and Garga Samhita indicate that Putana was the, one says the younger sister, one says the daughter of Bhavi Maharaj. So when Vamana came and Shukracharya said, no, don't give him 3 paces of land, Bhavi Maharaj instead gave the 3 paces of land. And Ratnamala when she saw, here's Ratnamala over here, when she saw this beautiful dwarf child, she felt motherly affection and thought to herself, if I had a son like him, I would cradle him to my chest and give him my breast milk. Our acharyas comment in this way, feeling obliged to her father, Bali, his pure devotee, and understanding her heart, Vamana addressed Ratnamala, promising her that whatever desire she was cherishing at that moment would be fulfilled. But after the two paces of land were given and covered everything, here is Bali Maharaj receiving the foot of Vamana upon his head. But after that, he was arrested. You promised me three paces of land. And you didn't give me three paces of land, so you've lied to a Brahmana. You should be punished. When she saw her father being punished, she became angry and thought to herself, if I offered my breast to him, I would smear it with poison to kill him. Ratnamala. And because it came just after this other spoken word, your desire will be fulfilled, that desire was also fulfilled. So here's Bali being arrested, and the royal assembly all discussing, was this the right thing to do, and so on, and Ratnamala became very angry. And thus she became Putana. And Krishna delivered her. Hare Krishna. So I told you it was going to be long. It's 8:15. Any comments? Yes.
We're talking about Dronacharya not accepting Ekalavya because he was not qualified.
Yeah.
I guess you discussed the same sometime earlier as well in your lectures, but I would like to hear it again. Why did he choose to instruct Duryodhana and his brothers? Clearly they were not qualified. He was proud of his birth.
The only thing I can say about that is there was a leela to be enacted, inspired by Krishna. He let that one through the gate. Because Duryodhana was to be killed in a different way. So he received some instruction, but was to be killed in a different way. Like, you know, why did Krishna run from the battlefield and into the cave where Muchakunda was to give Muchakunda some service and to greet him and show his form before Muchakunda, his devotee? So Krishna sometimes gives his devotees some opportunity to do some service. But to have Duryodhana killed in the whole drama of so many other lessons, you know, the Draupadi lesson and so many lessons, it's just part of a grand drama. So devotees, qualified devotees, are moved from within the heart by Krishna. I mean, even Putana was being moved within the heart by Krishna to try to kill Krishna. So for the purpose of the leela, I would say. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, I'm just thinking on the example of the cheating guru as Putana.
Yeah.
And you're thinking on the situation of what some of the things that we've seen happen sometimes through the years, in which you have a person who is very sincerely following and is placed in a position of being a guru, or comes to that position, and all of a sudden, you know, falls from
that. Wasn't that all of a sudden? But go ahead.
But you know, it seems it's not something. It seems that something that happens at a particular point.
Yes.
Not
pride.
So it can happen to anyone of, in yes. any situation that you big, know one sincerely.
Big, small, and in between. Pride. Pride goeth before the fall. You've heard that phrase. Pride. One may have some qualification, but not have a pure heart. And with that qualification, receive some honor or position, and then become proud, and then fall. But isn't the fall isn't instant, it's gradual. And, you know, there's opportunities to recognize. A number of things. I don't have the qualification or to recognize. I must be very careful, or whatever it is. You know, this contempt, this weed is starting to grow and choking my devotional creeper. But if one continues despite that, then the fall is gradual. None of this happens at once. Gradual. Therefore, one should always maintain and carefully cultivate a humble spirit with whatever. It can be, you know, somebody that's whatever. They come and they're given the service of washing pots, and then after some time, now they're cooking and somebody else is washing pots. And they can think, I graduated. I'm better than the pot washer. Or something. It's contamination can happen at any level. It's just, it's more noticeable when it's at a high level. And then innocent people are cheated. Something that's in my mind about this is when we were in Vrindavan for our yatra, on a Saturday evening, it took forever to get through Vrindavan, you know, to our place of residence, because there was a big crowd of people in front of a particular temple. And I was asking, you know, what's that? And our guide said, oh, that's the... I forget his name. I don't even need his name. You know, he teaches you don't need sadhana bhakti. Just go for raganuga bhakti. Calls himself to be a follower of Lord Chaitanya and just teaches raganuga bhakti. Although there was all kinds of scandals that he has a place in Austin, Texas. Part of his, you know, we held one of our Japa retreats in Houston at that location. And I saw when I went there some devotees, Spanish devotees from the Houston temple, that are no longer visiting the Houston temple. They go to that place because they want to do raganuga bhakti. Without they couldn't follow sadhana bhakti, now they want to follow raganuga bhakti. But what had just happened is his number one guy, leading sannyasi, when he tried to enter the United States, he was barred from the United States because of allegations of child sexual abuse from his position of being, like, you know, one of his leading guys as a sannyasi. He was barred from entering the country. He was an American. Wouldn't let him re-enter the country. So it was like scandalous. And that the same leader has this huge place. And throngs of people are going there. They don't have a clue what it is that he is. And then within that same period of time, he died. A brain hemorrhage or something like that. He was in, you know, and he didn't die in Vrindavan. He was taken to a hospital in Delhi where he died. You know, then there's all this, and Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was, he has another place in Varsana. He has some followers over in Varsana. So they were having his, you know, whatever it is, ceremony, funeral ceremony. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of followers who are being misled. Just like a little detail is one of our devotees from Guyana. Maybe you know Om Narayan and Frank Narayan from Guyana. They're from Trinidad, actually. So one of them that lived in Houston went to that New Varsana, it's called, in Austin. And he heard a sannyasini give a lecture. So at the end he asked the question, you've been explaining to us about following Raghunuga Bhakti without having sadhana, but are we to understand from this that it's okay to eat meat, have illicit sex, take intoxication, and to gamble? It's okay. We can do those things. We don't need regulations. We can do those things and practice Raghunuga Bhakti. Is that what you're telling us? She got really flustered. She didn't answer a question, his question, and just like shouted at him and didn't answer his question. As an example, I mean, that's outside of ISKCON, and your point is it can be, you know, within our own society, with persons that take on a service and don't have the qualification for that. But it's not just don't have the qualification, it's the pride that enters the heart in that disqualified position. And one shouldn't take such a position. Anything else? Yes.
I'm having a general question on Guru Maharaj. Understand the importance of sadhana in terms of cultivating the sincerity and qualities, but I'm seeing I'm somehow carried away or by the feelings of doing things nicely.
Feelings of doing things nicely.
Yeah. Of doing the duties. Of, that way I'm not able to invest.
Not able to?
Invest, you know, good amount of time or quality in sadhana. I want to improve in the area of sadhana.
Good.
I want to take some help, Guru Maharaj. How may I come back? Or, I mean, basically, like I understand the importance of sadhana, but I'm not able to invest.
Okay, this is off topic, but the question you're asking has a very simple answer. It's the difficulty is not in the answer. The difficulty is in the application. So, you start with a little common sense. You look at what you have to do, you make a schedule, and then you structure your day and your week such that there's time for these things, and you jealously protect that time, and you give yourself to that activity. I just spent some time in the course of my travel with somebody who, because of their career goal, they've sacrificed and sacrificed and sacrificed and sacrificed and sacrificed to achieve their career goal. And now they're well situated in their career goal, and now they're trying to get back into chanting Hare Krishna, which they originally had taste for, but they just put it to the side because of their career goal. And it's very difficult. You know, the same discipline that they had for their career goal, they can't connect it to the discipline for sadhana because it just doesn't have the same, it isn't the same level of commitment as there was to the career goal. So they're paying a price, and they know it, but they when it comes to getting up early, you know, when they're doing their career goal, get up early and doing the study and all this thing, and they can do it. When it comes to chanting, they can't do it. They feel tired. So we have created for ourselves some bad habits. Probably that applies to you. Some bad habits. Now, how do you change some bad habits? Starts with the desire, and then you make a plan, and then you follow through, and when you follow through, it doesn't always happen like, okay, boom, now it's fixed again. It's you know, some perseverance. We're paying the price for our bad habits and tendencies. You just stay with it. Make a plan, stay with it. Receive support to stay with it, and do it in a doable, measured, incremental way, and towards the goal of what you want, what you like your regular practice to be, your daily routine to be, your daily sustenance. Anything else? Okay. Yes?
Maharaj, about Ekalavya, how is the representation of Potana? I did not follow. I understood the pride aspect, and I understood the aspect that he had attachment to the moral values.
It's just an extension. Put the microphone down. It's just an extension by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that in addition to the pseudo-guru, there can be a pseudo-disciple. That's all. Hypocritical disciple. Ardently worshipping his spiritual master, even though his spiritual master said no. Hypocritical follower. And he developed some abilities from that hypocritical following, which some people praise and say, oh, just see what a good disciple he was. As a hypocritical guru, some persons may say, oh, just see. Like this example I just gave. Just an extension of hypocrisy. So his point is that as a guru should be genuine, representative of the disciplic succession, the disciple should also be genuine, representative of the disciplic succession. That's all. Connection. Okay, thank you very much, Prabhupada.